see where I'm standing here.
I guess it doesn't matter where I'm standing.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Tom Dewart. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
It never gets easy doing this stuff. My friend Kevin here is one persistent fellow. And he asked me about doing this, probably a year or so ago. And he kept asking me. And I think back in November, he finally got through to me. And I said, okay, Kevin, I'll take care of it.
Can they hear you?
I don't know. Can you all hear me? Yeah, they're shaking their heads. I faced the microphone. So anyway, he asked me, I think it was back in November, I finally agreed. He said, don't worry about it, Tom. It'll be January 7th. And I thought, oh, man, that's a long way off. Well, here it is. And I mean, it came up fast. So I'm a little unfamiliar with how this meeting runs. I think I came back when you first opened it. And I'm a little surprised that Kevin had enough faith in me to think that I have something to offer about going over the step. My sobriety date's November 4th, 1979. So that puts me at 41 years. And, you know, I haven't forgotten what I was doing when I first came in here. And but I can assure you I didn't come in here because life was good. And I had a hard time with that first step. But the first step in my mind is the gateway. You've gotta do step one before you can proceed to any of the other steps. You can't start partway through, halfway through. You gotta start at step one. And for me, that was very difficult. And it's funny how cunning, baffling, and powerful alcohol is. It's not really funny. I mean, after you're sober a while, it's funny. But I was married. I had three children. I was 32 years old. And I had a house that was being repossessed, a car that was a piece of junk. You know, had four different tires on it. It was 14 different colors. And I'll tell you what, it was such a nice car, my kids didn't want me taking them to school in it. It could have been 2 feet of snow and 10 degrees. They'd have walked. But anyway, so I thought life was good. And along with all of that other, the shenanigans and the house stuff and the car stuff, I had bill collectors. You know, I owed a lot of people money. I didn't pay my bills. That old clunker of mine was a 1967, now this is 79, Chevy Biscayne, which was a big old boat and had a huge trunk in it. And one of the things I remember about when I first started getting sober and not believing I was truly an alcoholic is I opened that trunk and I had, I must have about 7-8 months worth of mail in there. Unopened. That was all Biscayne's, held a lot of mail. So, you know, that's how I treated things. I just, I wasn't a responsible person, although I did work. And I think that was my rationale for not being an alcoholic. I managed to keep a job. And I was in the floor covering racket, and I worked for Bauman Brothers Carpetland down on Fifth Street. And we had days where my partner would say, you reek so bad, go out in the truck and take a nap. I mean, I'd drink until 2 or 3 in the morning. I'd go home, get about 2 hours of sleep, and get up and try going to work. So crazy. You don't think you're an alcoholic. I can't speak for anybody else. But I know, I when I first came through the doors, I thought I was just going to get some help learning how to drink. Okay, I didn't come here to quit drinking. I came here to figure out how to get my life in order. And I was thinking about it today. We came to believe that we were powerless over alcohol and our lives were unmanageable. Mine was the other way around. I came to believe my life was unmanageable. and then I was powerless over alcohol. After I got here, I realized I was powerless over alcohol. It took me a long time, but what got me here was the fact that I couldn't raise three kids. I had a wife who stuck by me, and I had, you know, I was a wreck. I mean, I was a wreck. And so that, you know, that didn't bother me. Didn't bother me. I went and thought I was on top of the world. Like, you know, I'm a good guy. I work every day. I got a house. Never mind, it's falling apart. You know, I look at my beautiful car. I had no problem driving that car. And when I think about it, I can't believe I used to drive that thing. But I think it was back in '76. We had the real big snow, and I parked it out in front of where I worked, and I got plowed in by the plows. And I mean, I think it was a year we had like 3 feet of snow. And it got plowed in, and so I don't know, I just walked home from some, you know, down on State Street somewhere, and I was lucky the next day they towed it out of there so they could plow the street, which made it very nice. I didn't have to dig that thing out at all, and I mean, it was buried, so probably would have been better if they'd have hit it, but I wasn't that lucky. So anyway, yeah, came to believe that we were powerless over alcohol and our lives were unmanageable. I don't know why that was so hard for me to accept, and I can't speak for anybody else, but I had a hard time with that. I mean, I came to meetings. I originally came in January of '79, and my first meeting was at St. Vincent's Hospital Monday night, a huge meeting, and I was impressed with the people there, you know. And that was the other thing. I think part of my image of alcoholics were, you know, trench coats, bridges, under bridges, you know, eating pigeons and keeping warm on canned heat if you weren't eating it. But when I got into St. Vincent's, I just couldn't get over it. I mean, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs. And I'm just a regular old guy. So that impressed me right away. I thought, well, something to this. But I kept going, and I wasn't buying, you know. So I kind of bounced back out. I went out twice after that, up until November 4th when I came in for good. But I don't think I stood up and announced that I was an alcoholic, oh, probably for a good 5-6 months anyway. Not that that's important, but I think it helps you to say it. So that you realize that, you know what, all these years, and that's the other thing too. I knew I had a problem with alcohol. I knew I had that problem years before I got here. I just couldn't figure out what to do about it, because what to do about it is go to AA, and I'm certainly not an alcoholic, so I'm not going to do that. But I knew I couldn't control my drinking. And I wasn't a daily drinker, but when I drank, I didn't stop. You know, I just didn't stop. And again, it went, if I could explain to you some of the stuff I was doing and the way I was living, you'd say, wow, you know, he belongs. I was the guy that at the wedding receptions, after everybody was done, you know, the older folks, they would start leaving after a while. I'd go around finishing drinks on the table, you know. Who does that? I don't know. I don't think normal drinkers do that. But so I was pretty bad drunk, and my thing was that I was a working man, and I was trying to pay the bills, and I wasn't trying to pay the bills, but I was working, and that, you know, I still had a wife and kids, had a house, had a job. I mean, you know, that was the other thing I thought was really important. I can't be an alcoholic. I have a job. I'm working, and alkies don't work. They just sit around and drink all the time. So no matter how you make the decision, whether you realize that alcohol is your problem, which I did, but I wouldn't admit it, or if your life is a total shipwreck, train wreck, shipwreck, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's time to get straightened around. And that's what got me here, was not having any kind of life outside of being drunk. and I hung around with other people that drank like I did, but even those guys used to comment on the fact that, you know, hey, you're drinking three beers every time we have one. And I'm thinking, well, what's the problem? So, and I never drank to be sociable. I drank for effect. Once I got started, I couldn't stop. One was too many, and 20 wasn't enough. So, basically, that's about it. I mean, to me, I don't know how else to explain it other than you've got to come to that realization that the first step is the gateway to 2, 3, 4, 5. And once you realize, even if you don't stand up and say it, you start thinking, yeah, you know, I might be an alcoholic, which is what I think I started to do. So I think, well, you know, maybe they got something here. Pretty soon it sinks in. And that's how it works. Okay. And you just keep going to meetings. You know, I did sit in my Plymouth Tavern, my favorite bar stool in the Plymouth Tavern, on November 4th or 3rd, staring at my face in that mirror behind the bottle. And I went to St. Vincent's and asked them for help, you know, and they left me sitting down there in a waiting room. I always thought it was a test to show you where my mind was, you know. Well, they're just waiting to see if I'm going to leave, you know. They don't really want to talk to me about my problem. They're just testing me. And I swear they left me downstairs in a room by myself for about 3.5 hours. But I stayed. I showed them. Adele finally came and talked to me, and she told me what all alcoholics want to hear, you know, I don't really think you have a problem. We're not going to admit you, you know, we're going to treat you as an outpatient. It's wonderful. This is terrific news. So she said, now I want you to come back in a week, and I'll see how you're doing. But I don't want you to drink. And I said, okay. And I left, I went home, I told my wife I was all happy, told her where I was. You know, after you lie to somebody for so long, so many times, and I'm sure she bought it. Oh yeah, I'm sure you're good. Everything's wonderful. But, I went right home after all that. I don't know, it was 2:30 in the morning or 3 o'clock by the time I got out of there. And I think my wife Laura probably thought I was drinking someplace. But anyway, that Monday afternoon or whatever the next day was, I went out and started drinking again. And then when I went back, and first thing out of her mouth is, well, did you drink, Tom? And I said, well, absolutely. You know, I said, what do you think? That's what I do. That's why I'm here. I need help with that. So finally, she popped up with, I think you need to go to AA. You know, now, ooh, that's pretty heavy dose of what your problem is, you know. I don't think I'm ready for that. But she said, yeah, you need to try it. It's helped a lot of people. And then I started, and I went to that Monday night meeting. But I actually, before I started the meetings, I had probably spent 4 weeks of what she called our outpatient counseling. Where she'd ask me how I did, and I'd tell her the flat out truth. I think one time I went and visited her drunk. So it was just one of those things. But when I got into AA and finally started realizing there's something here, and listening to other alcoholics tell their stories that were very similar to mine, I'm not an alcoholic, but boy, they're talking about the same problems I got, you know. How does that happen? So I started hanging around, going to a lot of meetings. I started getting light, and I quit drinking. I actually started getting involved in AA by going every day. I didn't really pick up a sponsor for a while. I didn't quite know what a sponsor was. I thought, well, that's a, you know, I'm thinking like a baseball team or something. You got to go get a sponsor for your team. I got to go get a sponsor. So somebody that pays me to go to meetings? Or how's that work? But that wasn't the case. And my first sponsor was an assigned sponsor. I knew a few folks in here. And so they took it upon themselves to assign me a sponsor. That didn't work out too good. We had nothing in common. So when you're new and you're just getting your feet on the ground, you know, get a sponsor, but get somebody that you can relate to, that you feel good talking to. And I'm not saying you can't talk to somebody, but I was a you know, a carpet installer, barroom drinker, brawler. I mean, I liked to get into fights and stuff. I was a wreck. I didn't pay bills. I didn't like people. I didn't like me. You know, I'd done a little time in jail for fighting and disorderly conduct and stuff. I was supposed to be a best man at a wedding, and I was in jail. So, you know, the guy they assigned me was a big shot at AT&T. And I thought, wow, you know, this guy makes lots of money, drives nice cars, but they can be alcoholics too. And that's what really kind of blew my mind about the program, is that there's every level of person in here. I mean, you know, we're all different, but yet we're all the same. And but that didn't work out, I think, because he just was a little bit of a cut above. I just felt that he was. I couldn't relate to him too well and different things like that. So I monkeyed around for a while, and I finally found somebody that I felt comfortable dealing with and talking to, and it kind of stuck. But again, I didn't have a problem with booze. I was just trying to get it all in order, you know. So finally, I went out one more time and got, don't even remember how I got home. But after that, I came in and I decided, you know what, I belong. I belong here. And I think it was after that I stood up and said, I'm an alcoholic. And I mean, it was almost like, ooh, something felt good about doing that. And had I known it would have worked like that sooner, I probably would have tried it. I would have tried anything. But so, and then it began. So that's the surrender. You got to surrender to win, is what my sponsor always told me. And part of what I'm doing tonight is you got to give it away to keep it. And so I'm trying to do that. But I don't know how much more I can tell you about step one, other than it's really important. You got to get that out of the way before you can advance at all. I mean, you can try it. You know, it doesn't work. You know, it's been tried. It doesn't work. And you know, one of the things that other sponsors have told me over the years, you know, if you get somebody that you're working with and they just don't get it, well, go back out. Go on. See how that works for you. Because we'll be here. You know, we'll always be here. But the worry with that is, and I don't really like to tell people that, but you know, if they keep doing it, that you kind of have to tell them. You got to hit your bottom. But the problem with that is they might not come back. And I'm sure my sponsor Ike and I, over the years, we've seen some folks that go out and don't come back, that should have, and they end up in the box on the wrong side of the grass. But that's the way it goes. So with that, I think I'll call my part of this over.
Okay. All right. Now, those questions and answers. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah. I put my mask on.
No, you don't need to. Okay.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
I know we appreciate your introduction here to the first step. So who would like to start us off with a question for Tom? If you're in the room, you can raise your hand. If you're on Zoom, go ahead and unpause yourself. But we've got a hand here in the room first. We'll start with.
I'm Donnie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Donnie.
Thank you for sharing tonight. What is it that you continually tell yourself, like after 41 years, to remind yourself that you're powerless over alcohol? Because I can understand that the manageability comes back as far as, you know, the job and the money and everything, or you're managing your character defects along the way. But what do you tell yourself, you know, on a daily basis, that I am powerless over alcohol, to keep your, you know, to keep yourself fresh?
Yeah. Well, for me, I've never forgotten where I came from. I've always, I've always was told early on, if you forget where you come from or where you came from, you're going to go back. So I always tried to remember. And I, after you're sober quite a while, again, I can't speak for anybody else, but life gets so good for you, you don't want to drink. I've learned to live, I learned a while ago that life is so much better without alcohol for me that I don't need it. And I don't have that urge to drink anymore. That left me a long time ago. But when I do start thinking about stuff, I just see some friends that are, you know, hey, I have a couple of children that are drink too much, you know, and I see that, and I'm just nothing I can do about it. But I know that's where I would be, you know, if I picked up a drink. I have no doubt in my mind if I picked up a beer tonight, I'd be right back to the races. And I've heard and I've seen, they claim it picks up with a break. It's not as if you quit 40 years ago and started to drink and it was like it was when you quit. It's like you kept drinking for 40 years, you know, when you pick up. So that's all. I mean, I just, I say, you know, a little prayer every morning. I thank the Lord every night. When we get into the spiritual part of this, these steps, you know, that was another tough one for me. And just ask for help every day, thank Him at night, and it's simple. And like I said, I look back at where I was and compare it to where I am. And there's just no comparison. But that's how I stayed. And I keep getting a meeting, lots of meetings. Yeah, even after 41 years, you got to get to several meetings a week. You're not, you know, you can, you know, back when I came in, it was initially 90 meetings, 90 days, but then you just kept going. You know, we did meetings every day of the week for a few years, 5-6 years. Well, now it's cut back to 2 or 3.
Another hand in the room here.
Hi, Tom. Tony Alcoholic.
Hey, Tony.
I want to thank you also for a great message. You know, I really like the way that you put, you broke step one down. You actually reversed the order of it, that your life was unmanageable and that you were powerless over alcohol. And I kind of thought when you first introduced yourself and, you know, stated you had 41 years of sobriety, I'm like, man, he's had to have forgotten step one a few times over the years. Yeah. And I realized that, you know, we practice step one every day. And I think it's very important that is said, that, you know, after you go through the steps, that you have to keep going through them every day. And that's what kind of dawned on me. So my question is how did you come, like, was that a breaking point in your program early on when you learned that your life was unmanageable and that you were powerless over the bottle? Or was that something that was really big to you? I mean, that seemed like it was pretty profound in your program early on.
I think it was it was pretty profound for me to continue with the AA. Was the realization, you know, that my life was unmanageable, not because I was a hard-working guy, or, you know, my wife hated me, my boss was a jerk, all these other things. It was, I came to realize, alcohol. So alcohol was the magic elixir that once I realized I didn't have that, my life became manageable. Started to get much better and stay better. But like you said, it was the trigger that let me know, you know, that's my problem. That's what this is what I need to do to stay sober and keep living a good life. Is to leave that bottle alone, and that if I pick up, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Who else has a question? Anyone on Zoom? Ike's got a question. We'll get Ike here in the room.
Uh-oh. Oh, you're in trouble now.
Yeah.
Yeah, my name's Ike. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
Tom, really, it's a statement. I'd like to say thank you. You've been a lot of help to me in my life. And we drank and acted about the same. I know I had a drinking problem. I had a behavioral problem. I think you had the same problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ike.
Who else has a question?
That's it.
Kevin won't let you off that easy.
Oh.
Never.
How
about the Zoom people?
There's a bunch of them out there.
Yeah, there you go.
Anybody on Zoom have a question?
I do.
Go ahead.
Can you walk us through how you sponsor new people today?
Have I sponsored anybody new today?
No. How you sponsor them today?
Well, how? Actually, I don't have much luck that way. I have one success story who just celebrated 2 years. But I basically tell them what I just told you, you know. This is where it's at. This is, you know, if your life is upside down, this is going to help you, you know. This is going to help you get it straightened around. And if you don't believe that, you've got to try it for a while. If it doesn't work, go back out and see how that works for you. But generally speaking, I just try to be an example. You know, I had a brother who drank himself to death. And I know he called me a few times looking to see how on earth I was managing to stay off the booze. But he never picked up what I was trying to tell him. So anyway, I mean, you can be an example to a lot of people. And some of them get it, some of them don't. And, you know, you can sponsor people and put your heart and soul into it, and they don't get it either. So, but that's about it. I just talk to them and try to work with them, and that's it.
Anyone else? All right, Kevin.
Kevin's going to jump in.
Tom, thanks for agreeing to do this. I know that everybody really appreciates it afterwards. It's just, you know.
I'm looking forward to it, too.
On Zoom, there are several people that have already done this, so the first few, you're a little nervous. The next few, you get comfortable. The next after that is, oh, I only have two or three left.
Yeah.
And then you get some gratitude, and they're grateful for doing it. And we've had like 16 or 17 people do this, so we're getting a good roundabout of how everybody does this, and everybody has over at least 30 years of sobriety. So I love the way that you explained it, you know, personally for yourself, that, you know, you didn't quite buy this. My question is, what was your wife, and how old were your kids when you were trying to get sober? And, you know, like you explained, you told your wife more than one time, this is it, I promise, never again.
Right.
And how did she change as a result of you changing?
Yeah. Well, she tells me that while I was still out there fighting the fight, she got involved with Al-Anon probably about a year before I decided to do something. So she kind of, which I think probably started to make me think even more. You know, she's not ready to kill me when I come in the house anymore. And I used to, you know, I used to tell people, I had to sleep with one eye open for a while. And so she did that. And it's interesting you mentioned my children. I have, they were 3 years old, 7 and 8, and they started leaving me little messages in the morning. Don't drink today, Dad.
Oh.
You know, and I think that started to work on me. My kids, you know, they're 7 and 8 years old. The 3 year old probably didn't notice it so much, but the two older ones, so that got to me. And my wife, you know, like I said, she found Al-Anon before I found AA.
Else on there?
Oh, anybody else have any other questions? No, but I'm seeing a bunch of no's.
Okay, they're shy at the beginning.
Okay, very good. Thank you all.
Okay, I guess we're done.
Oh, I'm not done?
Not yet. At least I have another follow-up to that. Oh, okay?
Oh, you're making me nervous.
I know, I'm trying. That's my job. After a while, you'll just ignore me, just like everybody else.
I won't go sit down until you tell me to.
Okay, good. Anyway, again, so it's interesting that your wife, you know, went to Al-Anon, so that's something
yes.
which kind of fished you in too, because and how, I guess my next question is, how long was it before that you were sober before you got rid of the Biscayne?
Well, it was probably about a year and a half.
And did you ever deal with the mail in the trunk?
Well, actually, yes. I bagged it up in a garbage bag and pitched it. I never did open it. I figured, you know what, if they want me, they can send me a new bill. But I did. I dug out of that huge hole, and thanks to AA. It didn't happen overnight. But all those things get better. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Okay.